It's a free country, you've heard people say a few million times. I can say what I want. I got First Amendment rights. Indeed, we do, although no right is absolute. Our next guest has absolutely been exercising his First Amendment right to free speech for several decades now. Stoney Burke has been a fixture for many years in the Bay Area, speaking out about the problems he sees in a society hard by the campus of the University of California, Berkeley. He's even been honored with a day in San Francisco in 2004. He lives mostly in Michigan now, but he's written a book not terribly long ago called Weapon, Mouth. And Stoney Burke speaks today at 5 at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. Stoney Burke, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Jeff, for having me down, and it's a pleasure being here at SOU.
So you hail from Romeo, Michigan, originally.
Romeo, Michigan, a small town in northern Macomb County in the southeastern part of Michigan, yeah, home of Kid Rock.
Really?
Sort of the...
Oh, I knew he was in the Detroit area. I didn't think about that.
Sort of the opposite of my political view, but, you know, here we are vying in the small town for who's the most famous person.
Well, it seems like a man from Romeo might have been destined for a romantic life. Has it been something like that?
Romantic life of working at the big boy, washing dishes or something like that. Mm-hmm. But,
So you come from a family that had a sense of justice. Tell us about your parents and the stuff they were involved in.
You know, I guess the first story in the book is, you know, my parents in the 60s were involved with Project Hope through their Catholic Church. And at the time, the town was somewhat segregated, and my dad had an African-American woman living upstairs. And they had a meeting with the church people all from the African community, and everybody came to our house, and some KKK guys drove by, shot into the mailbox, shot the house, and then wrote the N-word on the front sidewalk in tar. So that's the first... Yeah, that's the first story of the book. And that was, you know, when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and I'm thinking, America.
Right.
Disney Channel, America.
So we're not a Disney kind of America from your perspective
No.
In fact, your father apparently never repaired the mailbox. He left that bullet hole there for 40
years.
Yeah,
that's the most important part of the thing, that he left it up there till the day he died. I mean, took it down to the day he died. He would never change that. I mean, it was just an old iron thing, and he always kept it, and you could always see the bullet hole in that mailbox. And I guess it was a lesson to us or people in the community say, you know, I'll take a bullet for my beliefs. You know, that's how much I believe in, you know, integration and civil rights. And
so your parents set an example, but you describe yourself as being somewhat radicalized by your brother and his friends. Talk about the things that they felt. And this is like the 60s, 70s?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was the whole milieu of the era. I mean, I graduated from high school in 72, so all that period forward and up to then was the Vietnam War every day since 1960. So it seems like, you know, it's kind of like the Iraq War every day or now. It just keeps going on and on and on. And, you know, there was a time when, you know, protests came to our little small town and... to the Detroit area. And of course, I've always said, you know, if you really want to stop the war, start the draft again. Let's see if the congressmen are really going to withstand their constituents saying, I really don't want to go to this war you invented. So, yeah.
So you you mentioned the Ku Klux Klan and the folks in Michigan not happy with your parents, but then you also did some traveling in the South. Apparently, you did quite a bit of hitchhiking and got to see racism in a different context, but very much still strongly.
You know, I keep looking at my work through this book. You know, you have to do research your own book, and I'm thinking, God, it's somehow not that much different than it is now. Some of the same, definitely there's such a much wider disparity between the rich and the poor. But, you know, there's a scene in An American in America, a documentary done by Swedish television about me, where we go down to Clarksdale, Mississippi, and some of those back roads, and the people are living in shacks. No money, nothing. And you'd think it was like 1880. And you can still see that kind of poverty in this country. Not on your local sitcom, but, you know.
So it's one thing to experience those kinds of things as a young man, but then at some point a decision emerged to begin speaking out about it, and it filtered through a couple of different towns. You did finally leave the South and ended up, did you hitchhike all the way to Eugene, is that right?
Yeah, I hitchhiked all over the place. So, yeah, I did hitchhike into Eugene, came into Eugene, went down to the Bay Area, and I said, you know what, I like Eugene. So I stayed there, studied theater. And the idea I got for, I mean, what I do, I mean, that I suppose is different or not different than what I do. I work like outside in the public. And as far as I know, I might be the last public speaker outside without a microphone. There is, everything's technologically hooked up now. So anyway, I used to see these Bible thumpers come to Eugene, and they would go on and on for hours, and nobody could take them on. There's this folk singer called Jim Page. he's a famous folk singer now up there, but he would get out there with his guitar and he would sing an anti-Bible song or a spiritual song and mess them up. And I thought, how come there isn't anybody on the left that can do what Bible people? I mean, that's the right to believe that, but isn't there anybody that believes in working people and health care and civil rights and the nature like they believe in the Bible? And I've sort of created this character, and there we go.
So you took to the streets, and it started on the streets of Eugene?
Yeah. I mean, I was doing whiteface mime up there. Studied at the University of Oregon, so I opened up for the Fireside Theater, did some great shows up there, the Saturday Market.
There's a picture of you with the tights as you mime in the book.
Thank you very much.
It's radiant. Last...
So then I went down to Berkeley, and I did the same thing with whiteface, and the cops were hassling me, and the activists down there said, "No, Stoney, this is Berkeley. We don't do mime. We do talking. This is the free speech capital of the world. So here's a newspaper. Start reading it," and it took off from there.
Stoney Burke is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's been speaking out pretty much the stuff on his mind about our system as it is for, what, 4 decades now?
Yeah,
is
that essentially since 1976.
All right. He's also written a book called Weapon Mouth, and we'll explain the source of that title. It's actually got a true story behind it. Adventures in the Free Speech Zone is the subtitle. He'll be at the Southern Oregon University Hannon Library tonight at 5. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange here and now at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it sounds like you had the routine in Eugene, but then you got to Berkeley and it was like, oh, this is the place this will really go.
Well, it's like technique with material. You know, like I have studied a lot of mime. I studied with Leonard Pitt, a famous mime teacher down in the Bay Area, and I've studied up here at University of Oregon. So you take the technique, you add politics to that, you've got a viable form of and we're also talking from the time of like 1977. We just got out of Vietnam, so a lot of your audience members, people hanging around, remember, there's no computer, there's no like smartphones, people are going, yeah, nice routine, I'm stepping inside to check the emails,
right?
Who's the jerk outside? It's like, what's going on? We're in the streets everywhere, right?
So you were essentially YouTube person.
I was YouTube in person. I was the person with the newspaper and go, did you read this today? This is incredible,
So you mentioned coming at it from the left. So what are some of the major motivators to the stuff you've talked about over the years?
Well, of course, the most significant one is the little experiment I do. It's ongoing. I'm not sure if I'm successful at it or not. Can you stand on a public space in the United States of America and say what you want to say without, signing a paper, scheduling? Sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. So mostly it comes from police officers, or if people saying, oh, no, sorry, you're going to have to move along. You're going to have to leave. No, I don't want to leave. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll arrest you. Okay, I'll get a lawyer. It's a long process, goes over years and years. But that's the main motivator, that the minute you step out there to talk about those issues. I mean, for one thing, nature sounds a lot better talking about nature outside. Somehow the trees around you go, you know what? This guy's all right. He's not just talking about TV commercial that bothers him. Who cares? He's talking about us. And I talk about redwood trees and just the role of nature. I don't want to get too corny, but when you speak outside about nature, sometimes it's tough trying to find. But once you start talking about nature, something happens. Something comes up through the ground, through your feet, starts filling you with that you're doing something significant because you're breaking a code. Everybody's got a microphone. Everybody's got a TV. But if you stand out there, and I've always had this dream of like having, instead of 6 million people march, I have 6 million soapboxes. Mm-hmm. Spread them out all over the, I think there's like 2 or 3 a county. Tap them down, say, everybody gets their 5 minutes, you get off, somebody else, don't hide behind the machines or get out in nature and talk.
How did you support yourself while you were doing this in the Bay Area?
Any way I could. Mm-hmm. Driving taxi, being a medical courier. I have a story in the book about, how do you find a job where somewhere in the middle of the week for a 4-hour period, you're off.
Right.
To be stony, to be crazy, tell jokes. Most bosses go, See ya. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd have to do it. So I did those kind of jobs. So.
Where the Stoney is a self-applied name?
That's from a TV show called Stoney.
Oh, that's
Burke.
Right, with Jack Lord.
Jack Lord.
I know. Believe me, every reference you Google to Stoney Burke, it ends up bringing
it comes
up the
up
TV
two people,
show.
Either me or the guy, cowboy uh-huh. guy. And, you know, it's not a bad moniker to, you know, he was a modern-day cowboy. He drove around.
Uh-huh.
I hitchhiked around. Uh-huh. You know, he solved problems. I sort of. Make people laugh. I mean, you know, I'm not sure if I solve their problems.
The Stoney Burke, who is not a cowboy, is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's written a book called Weapon Mouth. He's been speaking out for years about things that concern him in society a lot at the campus of the University of California, Berkeley. He'll be at the campus of Southern Oregon University tonight at 5 for a speaking engagement at the Hannon Library. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's a free event, too.
Free event, too? Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, so. Well, you would have it no other way, would you?
That's right. It's the giveaway. Yeah.
So join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, thoughts about the other free speakers, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like you're really a man out of his time. I mean, when I look at the tradition that leads up to you, though, and I'm talking about in the other direction, time-wise, you should have been a troubadour or something, or a town crier.
You're totally right, you know. And I'm still trying to sort that out. It's something to do with the computers and the internet. You know, once it broke, I'm a big believer in circles,
uh-huh.
the circle of life. Our heads are circle, our community. Once, you know, computers, it's a powerful force to have a, like Star Trek. Am I going to listen to this guy talk about Dick Cheney, or am I going to step away with all the into my little, you know, of course, your true believers stay with you, but, you know, it's a break of the circle sort of thing. So my thing is the man out of time. Yeah, what if computers hadn't showed up? Maybe I would have done something else, but... you know, but then again, you got to stick with your true core beliefs, right? I mean, I did work in the comedy clubs, and I could see where it was kind of going, how you get funneled into the corporate comedy kind of thing instead of sticking. I had a choice back then in 1980. I had opened up for Whoopi Goldberg and Dana Carvey, big stars. And then I thought, you know, your heart. You know, the thing says, would you rather go out to Berkeley and really say something significant every day, maybe influence, or are you on this track to be on a sitcom that nobody wants?
So the
and you're totally rich. I mean, I wouldn't mind
being
totally rich, I guess. But, you know, your heart sometimes dictates.
So did comedy club bosses, for example, say, hey, you know, lay off the political stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's. I suppose it's normal to say, you know, you think the Palestinians should, you know, have some rights here. How do you build that into your... And if you mention that, what if the club owner's not... Boom, you're out, you know? Mm-hmm. Or...
And it's hard to make those funny, too.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I came up in a period where they're trying to, like, corporatize there so you couldn't say any swear words. So, you know, you're going from street performing... A really, like, you know, weapon mouth kind of hardcore satire. And you have to go into this club where people are, you know, buying two drinks apiece. And it wasn't for me. What can I say? I wish I had stuck to it in a way. But, you know, whatever.
So you finally, let help people understand the free speech movement in Berkeley. Because you kind of land in the middle of that, right?
Right. It's Genesis, Mario Savio. His class, a class of 1964, had come back from Mississippi from the Freedom Rides and, you know, wanted to set up tables around campus and say, hey, you know, what's going on down there? Let's get going with this thing. University comes in, takes all their pamphlets, takes all their papers, stacks everything away. Well, eventually, to make a long story short, the cops came down to arrest Mario Savio, who was speaking on a microphone. They surrounded the cop car, and then they got on top of the cop car and spoke. You know, I did have the pleasure of knowing Mario Savio while he was still alive, and I still get chills thinking of how when I got a circle and got performed, and he knew what I was doing, he was there and watching me. I thought that's a thrill. But you know, there is a plaque on the campus there. It was put there in 97 as free speech is the most wonderful thing of all.
Did it matter so much that there were people around to hear you, or was it just that somebody was out there saying what you had to say?
Oh, well, that was part of the danger. They were there to listen to you, and you were getting sort of having an alternative universe inside their universe, you know, sort of thing. So, you know, the free speech thing, it's... it's the First Amendment, right?
Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, was it, you mentioned taking the newspaper, kind of working, was that the day's routine? You'd pick up that morning's Chronicle or Examiner and
basically,
just start charging
get a highlighter pen, mm-hmm. go through it, you know, and Mort Saul used to do it and other comics before that. And it's kind of a tradition to once. And it's, I say comedically, it's like in our DNA. You see somebody standing there with a newspaper in their hand and they're talking. You think, you know, what the heck does this person think about what's in the paper? I'm going to sit and listen, you know, because they're also going off on, because back then anyway, I mean, we mostly read our news online now, but.
Did you think about, did you try for a gig as a newspaper columnist?
You know, I've done some writing, but I've never done the journalist angle.
You did some work for Pacifica Radio, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
As what?
KPFA, reporter. Yeah, I went to the 1984 conventions in San Francisco as a reporter for KPFA, but I ended up getting arrested by the Secret Service because I was dressed as Uncle Sam, and I went into the Nevada section, stood on a chair, made a speech about how homeless people were removed from the area so that the Democrats could come in and talk about how the homeless and so it was too much irony for the Secret Service, and so...
And I saw some stuff you did too for public TV from the 92 Republican convention at the Astrodome in Houston.
Right, Stoney Does. Right.
What was it called? Stoney Does Houston. And so there you were asking questions of Pat Buchanan when he was doing his practice
Pat
session.
Pat Buchanan, Oliver North.
Dan Quayle.
Al D'Amato, Dan Quayle. Mm-hmm. Now, that was definitely a censored piece. And, I suppose we could extrapolate on censorship. But, you know, but that was, anyway, that was one piece where Oliver North and Al D'Amato, because I got close to Oliver North, and at the time I said, Ollie, oh, I love your book. Oh, you're great. You know, that's how I'm buttering you up. I love you. He gets real close. And is it true you became a born-again Christian after 10,000 civilians died from CIA involvement with your... And you just keep it going. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're pushing buttons, and security is moving closer and closer, and you're continuing, and they remove... And so Oliver North saw that footage, and he called up, and, oh, yeah. PBS budged.
Mm.
Cut that, sure, Mr. North. White House, you know.
Wow. Stoney Burke's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is called Weapon Mouth. He'll be at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University tonight at 5. For free, he points out, which is, you know, again, free speech is free not just for you, but free for people to listen to.
Well, you know, I mean, I didn't put it in the book, but, you know, my heart tells me that even if you don't make money at it, do it. I mean, I have a quote from Gandhi that says, you know, even if you think it's insignificant and what you're doing it doesn't, just keep doing it. Do it, even if you have to give it away, even if you pay to play. I mean, you know, yeah.
So what is the source of the phrase weapon mouth? This actually comes from a police report, doesn't it?
Yeah, one time I was out there speaking at the many times I have, and the police came up and put me in cuffs and wrote up this big thing, and we looked at the arrest sheet and said, you know, device used, weapon, and it said mouth, voice. I said, what? You can't make that stuff up. I mean, it lasted about 36 seconds in front of a court or a judge or something, but still it made the title of a book.
So have you spent some time in jail as a result of
the but not long periods. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. When you do this, it's always the risk of jail. And usually I have a clown costume. And if I know there's a risk, I wear an Uncle Sam suit. Because the first thing people go, something's odd about this country. They just arrested Uncle Sam. In front of our school.
It's kind of
We're liberals. Mm-hmm. Let's get them out of jail.
You know, obviously you get a lot of joy from doing this out of doors. And do you still do it in Michigan?
I'm semi-retired at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I did it for 35 years. And, you know, it's.
Have you made the transition? I mean, there are so many people who do the same sort of thing, but they're bloggers now. You know, instead of standing up by Sather Gate, they're going to stand up.
Well, I've always got angles, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I'll tell you an angle that came up the other day. Ed Asner. Lou Grant wants the book.
Really?
I sent him the book. He wants to read it. He likes what he reads so far. He wants to know more. Ed Asner, Lou Grant, people like that. You know, I'm thinking someday it could be a screenplay.
Uh-huh.
You know, even a series sitcom where, like, Stoney Burke, he travels around and maybe a sci-fi thing where he sneaks onto campus and says, yeah, you don't have a license. Where'd he go? He disappeared. Who was that guy? They call him Stoney Burke.
He just materialized. You mentioned already the documentary. Some Swedish film crew did this
American in America. Uh-huh. Yeah, Swedish television, 1980, saw me performing in a nightclub or something and approached me and said, what would you do if you had money was no issue? I'd say, well, I'd travel around, just keep doing this. So we went back to Detroit. We went down to New Orleans. We went all over the country and found public plazas we can speak in, and it's amazing what you do when you travel. And but there it is.
Is it possible you're better known in Sweden than you are in the United States?
Probably not. But they did air it the same night, I think, Reagan and Carter were debating or something.
Oh,
like
really?
That. It was like they only have two channels, you know,
right.
So one channel was me. But it was it's a great honor to be part of a film, you know.
So how did it turn out that there was a Stony Burke Day in San Francisco in 2004?
You know, it's one of those things, like when you plant a seed, it comes up later. You know, one of the San Francisco supervisors, Geraldo Sandoval, was a supervisor, and he had went to University of California at Berkeley, and he says, God, I always remember this guy. Whenever I got a class, he would be out there railing and railing. That's Stony Burke. So he said, you know, I'm leaving office, and I want to give you a day before you leave, and here it is, November 6, 2004. I got the plaque at home. It's a beautiful honor.
That's an unusual thing. You say in the book that you run from president every 4 years. So here we are in a presidential election year. What do you make of all the hijinks ensuing on the campaign trail now?
To get out of confronting them personally, I am a candidate myself, Stony, for president.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I suppose I have my own spiel. But, you know, this is wild. It's hard to do satire when it's already written and you're supposed to repeat it and get a laugh at the laugh that's already like Trump and Palin. You can't invent stuff like that, you know. On one hand, you know, I did laugh at Ronald Reagan. I tell people, I sat there and laughed at Ronald Reagan. Look what he did to this country. I mean, look at the direction. You want to laugh at Trump that hard? No. You know, you got to think about it. Just the other day, last week, you had a elected official, Palin, resign to be a reality star on Fox, and she endorsed a guy who's a reality star that now wants to be the president. Okay.
It can get a bit, yeah.
Yeah,
sometimes
whoa,
truth is stranger than
where's
fiction.
Where's my joke now? I'm losing the tape.
Stony Burke has been doing satire for as long as satire will just lay there and let itself be satire,
yes.
But obviously it's rising up this year. He'll be tonight at the Southern Oregon University Hannon Library at 5 o'clock. His book is called Weapon Mouth. Stony, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I